Friday, February the 24th, 2006. Tips from the Top Floor, show number 101.
Here's another edition of Tips from the Top Floor, bringing you the best tips and tricks for your digital photography.
And today is a longer show again. We'll have an interview with John Arnold from the UK. And here's one that just arrived on a CD this morning in a badly beaten package, all covered in green slime.
Hey-o, Kermit the Frog here. Wishing Chris a very, very happy 100th podcast. Congratulations. Whee!
Oh, well, guess the postal services in the swamp aren't as fast as they are in other places. Thank you, Kermit.
And here's your host, Chris Marquardt.
Welcome to Tips from the Top Floor 101. This is the podcast about all things digital photography. Welcome to all the new listeners. If you want to find out more, go to tipsfromthetopfloor.com. The website complements this podcast really well. There is an assignments gallery, a very active forum with lots of great members, a section that goes along with the weekly Photoshop Corner segment on the show, and a big photography knowledge base that is entirely managed by the listeners of the show. And a quick shout out that I forgot in the last show goes to my brother Peter, because without him, I wouldn't have started podcasting and Tips from the Top Floor simply wouldn't be there. And if you speak German, make sure you check out his own podcast at lemotox.de. That's lemotox.de. The current assignment is still open for your contributions. This time it's not about taking a picture, but about post-processing one. The deadline is on February the 26th, that's in 2 days, and you'll find the instructions and template image if you click on the assignment button on tipsfromthetopfloor.com. The Tips from the Top Floor forum has crossed the 30,000 articles. This is really cool. Hey, keep on posting, everyone. If you're not a forum member yet, it's about time you take a closer look. This place is loads of fun, and I'm proud to present one of the most active Tips from the Top Floor forum members on today's show. Here's the interview. And today on the show, I have John Arnold from South Cheshire in England, and he is not only a member of the Tips from the Top Floor forum, actually a pretty big asset to the forum. He's just crossed the 2,000 posts boundary, which is, I think he's probably far ahead of everyone else with number of posts, and not just one-liner posts. Have to add that just for the other forum members. And, well, John, how are you doing?
Hi, Chris. Nice to talk to you at last.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. So, there's a few things that we could talk about, but I just did a very short introduction, so yeah, let me hand that over to you. Maybe you can tell the listeners a bit about yourself.
Sure. Right, well, I guess I'll do this from a photography point of view. Funnily enough, my interest in photography, although it's been around for a long time, I haven't really done much serious photography until probably the year 2000 was when I got my first SLR. Before that, it was really just an interest as a kid, and I will have played with 1-6 cameras and a couple of point-and-shoot 35mm cameras. But the time when I got really interested in photography and I decided to spend some time on it was when I was made redundant in 2000. So it's what you're going through at the moment, Chris.
You had a bit of a similar experience there.
Yeah, very similar experience. That's right. I was previously employed as a web god, which was a sort of an honorary joke title. I've been involved in the internet business for some years, and I was employed as sort of an e-commerce specialist for a car leasing firm in the UK. Unfortunately, they made a whole bunch of people redundant around about 2000 because tax laws changed and business got bad. I was expensive to pay for, so they got rid of me, and at that point I spent some of my redundancy money on a camera.
Which is that cool, was
Yeah, well, it's something, as I say, I'd been interested in for many years, and I'd never really put any effort into it, and I've always had an interest in art of one form or another. So I spent some of my redundancy money on a Canon EOS 300, which was even then their cheap range SLR. I bought a couple of cheap lenses with it, and I went out and started shooting. And I guess my interest actually in art comes partly from the fact that I've always been a science geek. I've always been what we in England would call a swot, one of the smart kids in school, you know, not the fashionable kids. And obviously I did the classic sciences and maths side of things at school, brought up very much with a sort of a science background. And when I got into programming and web design and things like that, there was a guy, I set up my own business, much like yourself, Chris, doing web work. I think you do media work, but I did web work since 1995 in my spare time. And I got involved in the programming side, and in the process of doing that, you end up doing quite a bit of graphic design.
Oh, yes. Oh,
so,
yes.
Doing graphic design, there was a guy I was working with down in London at the time who said, oh, well, of course, you know, you being a science guy, you'll never be a real, you'll never really be good at art or design.
I
took that as a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I've always been of the opinion that I can do anything if I turn my mind to it. So when he said that, I decided I was going to try and learn. And ever since then, I've been studying design. I've been studying typography, in particular, layout, colours, all those. I mean, it's perhaps a scientific approach to art as well. I'm never really sure how close I've got to art, or whether or not I'm just approaching it too scientifically. But yes, I've done as much as I can to learn about it, to be able to see things from a designer's point of view, and more recently from a photographer's point of view.
Yeah, and I think that the line between art and craft is a very fine one sometimes.
I totally agree.
And I do like the term web god, so me just kicking off that company, I definitely need some consulting in terms of web design. I do that, and I think I know what I'm doing, but it's just a lack of time. There's so many things to take care of. It's just incredible. So
I've just started
working on a new website to be able to really market my services in a good way and
good.
Trying to fit the photography in there. And yes, you are right. There's a lot of overlap in those fields. I mean, years ago, I used to be what's I think commonly called a webmaster, basically a jack of all trades who does everything from page design to server management and so on. That's
absolutely, yeah.
Really teaches you.
I think
a lot.
Actually, web designers are like doctors that make the worst patients. I think web designers are always have the worst websites, because the only time you ever spend any time on your website as a web designer is when you're first setting up in business.
Yeah.
After that, you never find time for it. And you know, so I ended up with a website that I designed in 1995.
Ouch.
I think I eventually replaced that when I actually got made redundant in 2000 and set up on the net as my own business, my full time business. I should say my web design business is called On The Net, so hence my domain name, OTNKUK. That got updated in 2000 when I made my business a full-time business as a result of being made redundant. And I'm not sure it's been updated since then. You know, I've done loads of other people's websites since then, but never my own. So
let's see. The topic of this show is photography, so let's try to get this discussion in that direction. But you're right. Web stuff and photography is very closely related. You also need...
I think compositionally it is.
Exactly.
And also, website design covers a lot of typography, which is, I think, contains a lot of the same sort of concepts. Typography a lot is about balance, and I think composition of a photograph is a lot about balance.
That's true, yeah. Okay, so you are a very active, maybe even the most active forum member on the Tips from the Top Floor forum.
Yeah.
Too active. I don't know. Maybe you're just a quick typer, you know. You probably type
certainly
with...
Certainly a quick typer,
You type with 10 fingers and 10 toes at the same time, I guess. So you are Well, where to start? It's pretty hard. You are known on the forum for giving great advice and feedback and things like that. And you are also known for one project that you did, and that was very impressive. You did post-process a picture, and you recorded that with a kind of a screen recorder that would then allow you to say what you do while you do it, and people can watch over your shoulder how you work in Photoshop.
That's right, yeah. Well, it all started with a website called DP Challenge, Digital Photography Challenge, which is a sort of a... they do a weekly or two, I think, per week now. They do an assignment, much like your photography assignments, where they give people a subject and people have to go out and shoot it, and then after a week everybody gets to vote on everybody else's challenge. And one of the challenges they did was an Ansel Adams challenge, which interested me because I've always been a big fan. So I happened that week to be travelling down to Weston-super-Mare, where we have every year my wife's family gets together, and we can't drink a lot, really. But before drinking a lot, I went out down the seafront, took some photos, and one of the pictures I got, which I got that magic moment where you just know that the scene you're looking at is the photo you're trying to take. Every now and then you can stand in front of a scene and say, "This, I know exactly where I'm going to stand and how it's going to look." And I had that moment with this picture, which I've called Western at Low Tide. And from there, I knew how the processing would go, and the final version of the image. Actually, at that time, my post-processing skills weren't really up to the level they are now. And the version I did then, I think, looks extremely poor now. So, around about how long? It must have been a couple of months ago now. I reworked it. Now that I've learned a bit more about Photoshop, I reworked it up and did things the way I think they should have been done. And the newer version is the version that I posted on the forum, got some very positive comments from the forum members, and a few of them asked me how I'd done it. And I was thinking about it, and I started off the process of doing a web page tutorial. I took a load of screenshots and I started writing text, and I thought, this is taking way too long, you know. One of these is going to take me a week. So I thought really the best way would be to actually show people what was going on my screen. So I found this piece of screen recording software, and I recorded it. And I think it took 7 videos in the end, and I struggled a bit with file size, and I struggled a bit with hosting, and in the end I bought a domain name, photowalkthrough.com, to host it.
Say that again.
It's photowalkthrough.com.
Photowalkthrough.com. I think one... we can already get one tip out of what you just said, and that is keep your originals. Don't throw them away.
Oh, yeah.
because you might acquire skills over time that then later on, when you get back to the original image and do another pass on the post-processing, you will most likely get a better result.
Absolutely. In fact, I'd go further than that. I actually keep the RAW files and the Photoshop files, which is a huge commitment to disk space. But the great thing about it is, if I decide I want to go back and do an image completely differently, and I have done that a couple of times, I've got the RAW files, and quite often the RAW extraction I did first of all, not only do you improve at Photoshop, you also improve at RAW extraction.
So you take your pictures in RAW exclusively?
Yeah, I take everything in RAW now. I did go through a phase of shooting in JPEG. I know you're a JPEG fan, and if I'm shooting family and stuff like that, where it really doesn't need a lot of post-processing, JPEG's fine. But my main interest is in art photography. It's in landscapes, nature, that sort of thing.
Yeah, JPEG. I'm not exclusive on JPEG. I used to go through a 1-year phase where I exclusively shot in RAW, and then the trade-off in file size and processing was... made it for me to go switch back to JPEG. But even now, if I see that a scene is maybe challenging in terms of dynamics and things, that's when I then switch back to RAW, and I'd say about 10% of my pictures are now still taken in RAW.
Right. I think that ability to see when a scene is challenging, that's something you learn. I mean, that's because you're a very experienced photographer. And I think probably I could do that now, but when I started shooting, I really couldn't. Even simple things like just looking at a scene and seeing where the bright parts are, where the dark parts are, and whether or not you're likely to be able to get detail exposed in both of those areas. You know, that's something that I think you learn over a period of time.
Right, that's the experience thing coming in.
It is, that's just experience, that's right. And having taken a lot of shots and seeing how they came out. And after a while, I'm sure you'll agree, once you look at a scene, you're actually able to say, well, you know, I know the camera is going to expose for that sky, and I'm going to end up with very grey, muddy detail in the ground portion. So, you know, maybe you'll knock the exposure compensation up a touch. But that's all pure experience. And as a result, I think RAW has served me very well, because I'm still really learning that. And RAW gets you out of a lot of bad situations.
Right, and the advantage of shooting in one of the modes exclusively is, of course, that you will be able to have a very streamlined workflow, and you don't have to change workflow between different shots.
Well, that's perhaps something worth mentioning, actually, the workflow. I have two very different workflows, because the kind of processing I do on photographs, particularly recently where I've got interested in fairly extreme image styles. My processing takes longer and longer and longer as time goes by, and the latest image I did, I think, took me 4 hours.
Oh my!
And that, you know, I could still carry on fiddling with that. I think Mark Gilvey posted the other day on the forum to say, one of the most important skills to learn is knowing when to stop, and I absolutely agree with that.
Could
he teach me, please?
Yeah. And speaking of file sizes, Mark Gilvey also said on the interview that I did with him that some of his files go into the gigabytes.
Yeah. Well, I did one the other day. I did a panorama. We had this most wonderful sky just a week or so ago, where the sky had sort of bands of blue and orange in it. And I looked out the window and saw the sky, and I thought, right, I've got to go out. So I grabbed the camera and I walked out, and I did some quick and dirty panoramas. So I just stood and I pointed the camera and clicked and turned and clicked and turned and clicked, and just did a whole load. And when I was processing them, I did the first few in my standard 8-bit RAW conversion. And by the time I'd done all the heavy processing I do on them, and darkened it all up and burned and dodged, and because you're working with really one channel, and it's the blue channel, which has always got the most noise in it.
Oh yeah.
I found I was getting some really nasty solarization. I was getting noise. I didn't like what I was seeing. So the big panorama I did, I actually processed in 16-bit. You know, when you do a RAW extraction,
right,
there's that checkbox in the bottom corner that's, I think it's a drop-down. You can choose between 8-bit or 16-bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I converted all my RAW images in 16-bit, and I pasted all these images together, because, of course, it was a panorama. So I ended up with this absolutely enormous file by the end. I think it was 112 megabytes or something by the end. that was just a sort of a single layer stitched panorama.
And that's 112 megabytes in the file. When you get that in memory, it's probably even bigger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's right. So that took a lot of memory processing that. I find 16... I have a 2-gigabyte machine, and it working in 16-bit images still makes my machine work pretty hard.
So back to photowalkthrough.com.
Yeah.
The tutorial that you posted there, again, it's seven films.
Seven chapters. I think they're all about sort of 2 or 3 minutes long. Thereabouts.
Yeah, and you very nicely took those apart and went through specific areas of the image and how you did things. So why don't we just try to recreate some of that here, just a very quick walkthrough. So when you got this first picture, and I recommend everyone who listens to this now to go to photowalkthrough.com and look at this picture first. And when you had this picture with the boats on it and this this pier with the building in the background, what do you look at first? How do you start about post-processing something like that?
Well, it it's actually, I'm just looking at the picture to begin with. The I'm just thinking about the way I was trying to compose the picture, was actually drawing on something that you've said in the past, which is try and find a foreground, a middle ground, and a background.
Right.
And when it comes to processing that image, the thing I think Ansel Adams does very well, it's the thing he's very famous for, is getting the tones in the image to match. Tonal balance, I think he calls it. And it basically means you've not got a really bright sky and a really dark ground. And, you know, what he works on is making sure that the image works. Every part of the image has got detail and balances, and you know, has good contrast and is striking. And that I think is what Ansel Adams did very well. So looking at that image, we've got some boats in the foreground, we've got some wet sand that the boats are sat on that are reflecting the light in the sky, we've got the Grand Pier, the Western Supermare Grand Pier in the background, which is catching the light at the end, and it's got quite a fairly muddy reflected light on the side that's facing us. And then we've got a sky which has got some reasonably dramatic, I would have preferred more dramatic, clouds. And the first thing I do in the processing is to try and balance those levels out.
So do you mean that's a sort of an equalization to darken the sky and brighten the foreground a bit?
Yes, that's the sort of the beginning point for it, yes. And on the video you'll see, I think, the first couple of things I do are literally just sort of gradient. I do some lightening layers and some darkening layers, and I use layer masks that I think you talked about in one of the recent Photoshop corners. Just sort of doing gradients on those, so that the top half of the picture, which is the sky, is darkened down, and another one where the bottom half of the picture is lightened up. It was quite a straightforward picture in this regard, because it is quite half and half between the sky and the ground.
Right.
But normally, the image I did recently, for example, I did an image of a local landmark, the Maucop Castle, which is a castle set against the sky. And of course, with an image where you've got something that actually is against the sky, it's quite difficult to cut out the whatever it is that's against the bright sky, because normally you darken the sky down, and if you're not careful, you end up darkening down the thing that's against the sky as well.
Right.
So that image was the one I'm talking about that took me 4 hours, and the majority of that time really came from working on keeping
from
sky,
getting the selection
the
right,
castle separate. That's right. Yes, getting the selections right. So anyway, going back to the western image, actually, even before leveling out the tones in the image, I actually, one of the very first things I do is noise reduction, which is slightly at odds with what you said in your noise reduction program, I think, recently. You mentioned doing it towards the end. I actually do it at the beginning.
Okay.
The reason I do that is that I use Neatimage, and I have the profiles for my camera, which is the Canon 10D, downloaded for that version of Neatimage. And I think I get better results if I use the image as it came out of the camera in RAW, rather than trying to do a neat image on an image that I've heavily processed. This is perhaps because I do fairly heavy processing on my images. For images that don't need a lot of processing, I said earlier I have two different workflows, and we're really talking about the artwork images I do in the current workflow we're talking about. But for family images, things that don't need a lot of processing, they tend to just come out of I don't even get them into Photoshop. I just do them through the RAW converter in Photoshop, and they come out the end of that. And if they need neat imaging, then yes, at that point I would do them at the end of the process, because
okay,
I do all my editing within the RAW converter.
It's interesting, because I think there is as many different workflows as there's photographers out there.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, yeah.
And different preferences. So getting selections right, that was one of the things I just picked up from what you said. Getting selections right, what do you do in order to do a good selection if you, for example, have something against a bright sky, something dark?
It's very, very difficult. I wish there was an easy answer to this, and I'm not sure there is. There are a couple of tools that can help. Select by color is useful. Sometimes doing selections on a channel. You'll know about the channels palette, which is docked with the layers palette.
Right.
On an RGB image, so a color image, sometimes you'll find that the information you want, the information that allows you to make a good selection, is easier to do either a magic wand or my personal preference, which is select color range. You can sometimes get the selection you want by going into a particular channel.
Okay, so you flip through the different channels and look which one has the highest contrast between those two sides that you want
to
separate.
That's exactly right, yes.
The
one that's got the best contrast, sometimes you'll find that you can get skies out using, I don't know, the blue channel or something from the channels palette, and using the select color there, select color range there.
Have you ever looked into the pen tool?
Yes. The pen tool is very, very useful for cutting things out. It's very, very useful for anything with hard edges. I find it a lot less useful for my landscape work.
Right. If you have a bit of a scattered line, like a tree line or something, the pen tool is probably not the right thing to use. Yeah.
That's right. I wouldn't like to try and use it for something like cutting out a tree. It might very well be useful for cutting out things like castles, where perhaps you've got, if it's a simple outline. But I do find the pen tool takes quite a bit of fiddling with.
It takes practice, first of all.
Yeah. It does take a lot of practice.
Yeah, I'm still learning it. I've started using it a while ago, and for geometric kind of selections, it's really, really good. But yeah, you're right, it takes a lot of practice.
It really does. And I think it's great for photo manipulation and perhaps stock work, where you're taking photos of maybe objects that you want separations from. But I don't really find it as useful for my landscape stuff, because you're dealing with natural shapes and you're dealing with very detailed edges of things. So I, just in terms of getting selections, there are a couple of times where you can use things like the select color range, or you can use the magic wand, but more often than not I find myself just throwing a layer mask on there and getting out the brush tool. And
You paint the selection then?
That's right, I paint the selection, yes. I have a Wacom tablet, which anybody that does any post-processing a lot, I really strongly recommend. If I've got one tip to anybody dealing with Photoshop and editing photos, get a Wacom tablet.
Yeah, and the small Wacom tablet, A6 size, that's...
That's all I have, yeah.
And that's fairly okay. I think they're called Volito or something.
Right.
I have one of those, and it was something like 50 bucks, 50 euros.
Yeah, dirt cheap. And actually, I'm not sure that one has been available in America until very recently. I think Americans have had a more expensive range until recently.
Yeah,
the Volito just came out.
Right, and you don't need the bigger ones. You don't need the ones with angle sensitivity. Pressure sensitivity is fairly enough for Photoshop editing.
That's right. I do use the pressure sensitivity. I don't have angle sensitivity. I've never felt the need for it.
Yeah, I've seen that in the tutorial, the pressure sensitivity, and using Photoshop with that, or any application that supports it, using that with a tablet is really going to make a big difference.
That's right. You speed up your process so much more. With a mouse, for example, you're constantly going in and changing the opacity of what you're doing. With the pen, you just press lightly.
Right.
I leave my opacities on 100% almost all the time for brush pressure.
Right.
Just because if I want to do a light line, I just don't press very hard. And it takes a little practice, but once you're used to it, you can actually get an awful lot of control for fading lines in and out and things like that. So the other thing tip for Photoshop users,
oh, sure,
is get used to using the square bracket keys next to your Enter key, if you, at least on a British keyboard, for changing your brush size. And Shift with those keys will change the softness of the edge of your brush.
Right.
I use that all the time.
Yeah, that's
particularly
that's,
for cutting things out.
Right. Then that's two keys that I frequently use, and then I usually have the the hand on the X key to switch between floor and background, because when you do burning, dodging, and these kind of things, or painting in layer masks to make a contrast layer, to soften a contrast layer somewhere, you'll be constantly switching between black and white.
Yep, all the time. The D key as well. If you find yourself accidentally picking up a color, or your colors are not what you expected, a quick press of the D key gets you the black and white back in your foreground and background colors.
Yeah,
I use the D and the X and the square bracket keys, and the space key for dragging things around.
Right. Oh yeah, that's important too.
My recent discovery: the control key for dragging layers around.
Control. Oh yeah, yeah. You can simply select a shape by pressing control, clicking on that layer, and then it's selected, and that's very helpful.
Yeah, I think just in general, you said this recently, and I really agree. If you want to speed up your Photoshop work, learn the keyboard shortcuts.
At least the essential ones, and that's going to speed you up quite a bit.
Enormous change, yeah.
So photowalkthrough.com. That's where your tutorial is. Are you planning on having any new work up there anytime soon?
Yeah. People seem to like what I did. I mean, not a lot of people know about it at the moment. I guess a lot more people know about it now.
Definitely.
My thinking was, I don't want to try and just do another Photoshop training website. There are hundreds out there, and you yourself are doing an excellent job with the Photoshop Corner. What I thought I would try and do is take a slightly different angle. Instead of teaching people tips for Photoshop, I thought I'd work through an image. So take people from the beginning of the image as it came out of the camera, and just explain the thought processes as much as the techniques behind how I got from the original image to the final image. I think that's an angle I've not seen done before.
And yeah, you are right. I've when I started out with Photoshop, I was desperately looking for this kind of tutorial walkthrough kind of thing, and I never really found something good. I think what you did is the first time that is really bringing all those things together, and I'm really looking forward to what you're going to come up with there.
Yeah, well, I suspect that what we will end up with is a site that is, it might possibly repeat itself, and that's fine, because I've certainly already found that people who've watched the tutorial videos have said to me, oh, how did you do such and such again? You know, I go through a lot of processing techniques very quickly in that first set of videos, and you know, nobody's going to take it all in on the first try. So I think it's okay if I repeat myself and do tips that I've done before again. There's going to be, I think, possibly quite a lot of advanced stuff in there. I'm not pretending to be any kind of Photoshop god, but the bits I know how to do, I will probably cover fairly quickly, and there may very well be things that people don't know how to do. There may be things that people can write in and suggest that I can do better, and it would be great if there was some element of feedback from the people who view the site.
Well, you have
to tell me what they liked.
You have to set up a forum or some feedback mechanism then.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've already got an email address. I'm sort of holding fire on the forum to see whether or not anybody's interested yet.
Yeah, well, let's see. After this interview, I'm pretty sure that there will be quite some traffic to your site, and I hope you have. I hope you're prepared for the bandwidth for the downloads.
Yeah, I'm feeling like I'm going to get slash dotted.
No. Tips from the Top Floor is not that famous yet, and not that big.
Chance would be a fine thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, John. Thank you very much for being on this show. Any last words?
Pleasure.
Any tips? Any additional things that you want to mention?
I did think of one thing I wanted to say. Something that struck me while I was on the London get together. I see a lot of people trying to take photos that aren't there. If I have one tip for anybody going out hunting for photographs, rule number one has got to be shoot what's there. Don't try and shoot what isn't there. If you're looking at London Bridge and the sun is behind it and you've got no chance at all of getting any detail on the front of it, either go for the silhouette or don't shoot it at all.
Okay.
And I don't mean that to be aimed at any person in particular, but I do see a lot of people saying, people looking at subjects are not looking at subjects and light and composition.
I think that also comes with experience, with time.
I think it does, yes. Yeah. I think it does. There's something I quite often say to people, and I recently discovered that Ansel Adams said the same thing. I've been saying to people recently, the trick to getting a good photograph is standing in the right place. And I don't just mean moving a bit to the right. I mean, if you want to get a good photograph of animals, going to the zoo is a good start. Going to Africa is an even better start. Going to the Antarctic is a good start. Standing in the right place might mean standing in another country.
Right.
It also means moving a bit to the right, if you're thinking about composition. Unfortunately, I thought I made this up, and I read on a website just a couple of days ago, and I was mortified that apparently Ansel Adams said almost exactly the same thing.
Well, he was first, at least.
Yeah. Well, I see. Now I'm wondering if I just read it.
Oh, sometimes that happens. Actually, that happens to me. I'm a musician too, and sometimes I come up with a fun little melody or something, and I think it's the greatest thing ever invented. And then a week later, I hear it somewhere, and I'm not aware. I was not aware that I just copied it, because I obviously must have heard it somewhere before, or maybe some things are just so universal truths that they just keep repeating themselves.
Well, I think the same happens in photography. I think the more we play around with images in Photoshop, the more we find ourselves unconsciously replicating things we've seen.
Maybe.
And that's okay. I think Michelangelo didn't start out painting the Sistine Chapel first off. You know, he had to learn how to paint.
Right.
And the same way, we have to spend our time with Photoshop, learning how to reproduce the techniques that have interested us. Find photos you like, try and reproduce. And from there, once you get good at making things looking like stuff you've seen before that you liked, then you'll develop your own style from that. And I think developing your own style has got to be probably one of the loftiest goals for any photographer.
Wow. Now
having a recognizable style.
That's a perfect thing to finish up the interview. John, thank you very much for being on the show.
It was my great pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
I hope that a lot of the listeners will now go to photowalkthrough.com, and I also hope that we'll soon see a lot of new content there.
I'll do my best.
Okay, John, have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
This is Tips from the Top Floor, bringing you handy hints to enhance your digital photography. Check out the website at www.tipsfromthetopfloor.com. Send your feedback to info@tipsfromthetopfloor.com.
And that was it for today's long, long show. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you're back on Monday for the next Photoshop Corner, where I will talk about the Photoshop CS2 version queue. Make sure you'll fill out the PodTrack listener survey if you haven't done so yet. This is a very, very important thing for me. It's anonymous and it'll only take you about 5 minutes. The link is in the show notes. Thanks for your support. If you listen to this from a website, you can also subscribe to the show for free using iTunes or any other podcast aggregator. Just click on the according links on tipsfromthetopfloor.com. My name's Chris Marquardt. Have a wonderful weekend. Talk to you again on Monday. Take care and happy shooting.